Chapter 8. After dinner, Mo clapped sharply and announced the campers should bust their plates. They had 30 minutes of free time. Then everyone should meet at the fire pit for their first official dragon experience. The students all headed for the doors. Ms. Starr stopped Andres. She took his leash from Bax.
"I have bricks for your pack," she announced. "Mo sent someone into town for them. Come with me and we'll get it sorted."
She reeled Andres down. Nurse Riley's backpack was loaded with bricks now. Andres put it on and sank to the floor. But it hurt. It didn't fit him well, the way his pack from home did.
"Good?" Ms. Starr asked. "One less brick, maybe."
Ms. Starr took one out. It still hurt, but Andres nodded.
"I bet that feels better," said Ms. Starr perkily.
She patted him on the shoulder. Andres smiled. He knew he was supposed to be grateful. But as he followed his teacher toward the fire pit in the meadow, he missed the freedom of weightlessness. He and Ms. Starr were the first guests there. A young woman who was clearly a flare was lighting the kindling, building a fire within a circle of stones. 20 minutes later, the flames were crackling and snapping, and the UDM kids were beside him. Andres glanced across the fire at Tip. Tip made a funny face. Andres grinned, and the evening got better. Ms. Starr led everyone in campfire songs. She stood on a tree stump and got them all to sing, "This Land Is Your Land," "Oh, Susanna," and other hokey classics Andres still kind of liked. A couple of Sage Academy flare teachers lit sparklers. A couple of the fluxing students turned into kittens and chased each other around the grass. After a while, Mo emerged from the forest that bordered the field. She carried a large box in front of her. She put the box down several yards from the campfire. Flutterings came from within, and Andres heard a delicate, flute-like tinkling. Sebastian, who had worn his head cone during dinner, took it off.
"That noise," he said. "It's the loveliest sound I've ever seen."
"Luminous dragonets are famous for their furbling," Mo said.
"Furbling?" said Marigold. "Luminous dragonets?" Sebastian said, his voice filled with wonder.
"Luminous because they emit light, like fireflies do," said Mo. "Dragonets, because they are one of the smallest dragon species we know about. These live in hives at one end of our property. They enjoy occasional outings, but they'll fly back into their box at the end of the evening. They know the box will take them safely back to their home."
Nori's dad, Dr. Horace, nodded.
"Children, pay attention. There will be a quiz when we return to the academy."
"No one will have any trouble remembering these," Mo said.
With a flourish, she opened the box.
Oohs and ahs rippled around the campfire. The luminous dragonets were smaller than Mo's hand, elegant and long, with brilliant iridescent wings. They swarmed into the night sky.
"That one, it glows purple when it flaps," cried Marigold.
"And that one glows yellow," cried Willa.
"Whoa," said Bax.
"They're miraculous flukes of nature," said Mo. "The laws of science say they shouldn't exist, couldn't possibly exist. But here they are. That's why dragons are classified as magical animals, different from species we can explain with science."
Andres loved watching the dragonets. He was entranced by their jeweled colors and their flashing wings. But he was equally content to watch Sebastian, who looked happier than he'd ever been.
"Miraculous flukes of nature," Andres heard Sebastian murmur.
He caught Andres listening. He grinned.
"Like us."
Then he closed his eyes and lifted his face, letting the dragonet's bell-toned furbling transport him to another world. Too soon, Mo was blowing on a funny-looking instrument to draw the tiny dragons back to their box. "Time for you campers to get to bed," she said briskly. She closed the box and locked the hinge. "We have a big day tomorrow." The grown-ups threw buckets of water on the fire. Elliot, confident in his upside-down magic, iced several logs to put out their flames. Tip and Phoebe clapped when they saw the freezing magic. Ms. Starr put her arm around Elliot. "You're letting yourself shine," she told him, "and it makes me happy." "One more thing," called Mo. She was standing on the tree stump, waving at them now that the fire was out. "Tomorrow morning is pajama breakfast, a tradition here at Dragonhaven. Teachers and students, come straight to breakfast in your PJs and bring your appetites. We'll have the grandest waffle bar you've ever seen. Strawberry syrup, whipped cream, fudge sauce, fruit. I promise you'll love it." "Dude," said Tip, appearing by Andres's side. He held out his fist. "Waffles." Andres bumped his fist against Tip's. Dragonhaven was turning out awesome. In the girls' cabin, everyone was in night clothes. Willa had a fleecy pink sweatshirt and matching shorts. Marigold had a long blue nightgown that was surprisingly old-fashioned, given that she was usually a boots and leather jacket kind of girl. Ms. Starr changed in the bathroom and came out in lime green fleece pants and a t-shirt with a bunny on it. Nori had brought her purple sweatpants and a short-sleeve sports jersey for the Pouncers, her favorite Tiger Ball team. But she didn't feel like showing them off to the other girls. She felt strange to be sleeping away from Aunt Margot's. And Father was here, and she had barely talked to him. And she couldn't get comfortable in her bed. Once everyone was under the covers, Ms. Starr turned out the light. Then she retired with a flashlight to her bunk on the other side of the room, reading a book and leaving the girls to themselves. "The luminous dragonettes were so beautiful," Marigold said with a sigh. "Mo said we get to see them again tomorrow night." "I want to see them every night as long as I live," said Willa. "You know what's cool?" Marigold continued. "The luminous dragonettes, when they furbled, it was like I could hear them inside my bones. I didn't even need my hearing aid." "I think I heard it in my bones too," Willa said. "I just didn't think of it that way until you mentioned it." "Do you think tomorrow we'll get to see the big dragons?" Nori asked. "My mom says this place has a group of tangerine dragons," said Willa. "They're supposed to be 15 feet high." From far off in the forest, a tremendous and terrifying roar filled the cabin, rattling the wooden walls and buckling the screened windows. Nori's heart stopped. She forgot to breathe. The roar went on and on, sucking away all thought, or even the thought of thought. Finally, it ceased. Willa spoke in a pretend baby voice.
"I want my mommy."
Nori and the others laughed, but Nori knew it was not 100% a joke. She stuck her head under the pillow. She didn't want to think about mothers. Her own had died when Nori was little. She had been a lovely mom, a doctor, a great Tiger Ball player, a loud singer, a baker of muffins, and the kind of person who would always read just one more story before bed. With her gone, Father wasn't much of a dad. He worked hard, kept the fridge filled with food, and kept the house clean. He did let Nori, Dahlia, and Hawthorne have a lot of pets. But he was often cranky, and he didn't seem to know how to talk to his kids. He read bedtime stories, but only in a slow, boring voice, and only books he deemed educational. Father was opposed to graphic novels and sports on television.
He was opposed to dirt and chaos and beaver lodges and squid ink.
He was opposed to chocolate chip muffins, even.
Nori sniffed the air of the cabin for Father's scent. He usually smelled like coffee and sandalwood aftershave.
Maybe he had come by, invisibly, to keep watch over her and say goodnight.
He was a flicker, after all. He could do it.
No, he wasn't here. She was pretty sure. She knew she embarrassed him. Her magic embarrassed him. Her school embarrassed him. Her hair embarrassed him. Her shirt.
Father coming to tuck her in and make sure Nori was okay? That would be some magic, all right.